Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Eliza Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's BUNEKE.org.
Well, welcome to the show. This is Mary Brotherton, and for some reason I thought that intro was never going to wind up and stop. But here we are. It's April the 2nd. I'm here with Manoj Agarwal. He's an entrepreneur, an investor, and he's the CTO of Tetranoodle. That's a software consulting company that helps startup founders with their tech projects. Manoj runs his own podcast called Bootstrapping Your Dreams. And we have a lot to cover tonight. So welcome to the show, Manoj.
Thank you so much. I was so excited to be here.
Well, thank you. I know we talked about a few things before the show, and I definitely want to get to those. But before, I want to bring another little tidbit about you. You own multiple patents. I'd like to know what those are. And I know that you teach more than 125 students.
I have four patents in different fields, mostly related to machine learning and artificial intelligence. And in terms of students, so right now we are around 150,000 students across the world.
Whoa.
So we teach machine learning and all the latest technologies. Machine learning, blockchain, artificial intelligence, mobile programming, security, all those kind of things.
Okay. Now, you've written two books. What are they about?
Those are also very hardcore technology books, so it's not for general audience.
Gotcha.
One is on a form, and another one is on security, firewall. So.
Oh, my husband probably has read it or something very similar because he's all about that stuff. I know that you travel and you have a young family. Your sons aren't very old. And if somebody looks at your biography or your page about me on Tetranoodle, it sounds like you're a man who has everything he's ever dreamed of. But I know your life didn't start out this way, did it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So you were young. You were like, 15 when you started working in a factory?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, that was an interesting time. So, you know, I was working there pretty hard work, like 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And there was not a lot going on in that town. It was a very small town. So, I sort of realized life may have more to give. And one day I was going through these magazines, you know, they had business magazines. And I was going through them and there were lots of rags to riches stories. I'm like, you know, these people look similar to me. Like, you know, they're not any different than who I am. So what is going on here? Like, you know, what can I do here? And then all I had was, you know, my knowledge and brain. So I basically said, okay, I'm going to use that and gain the right education, whatever I need to do to learn and try to see how far I can go with that. And that was sort of the trigger where I started learning more. And I got lucky in many ways as well because, the software industry was just on the boom at that time when I got into it. So I had a good ride initially. So that was the story.
Now, when you were working in that factory, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, you were making what, $12 a
$2.
Week? $2
yeah.
a day.
Yeah.
And now you've been a technical leader in several startups. How did you get from $2 a day to being the CTO where you are today?
Well, as I said, you know, it was just one step after the other. So when I said, okay, you know, I need to learn something, I need to do something new, at that time, the latest thing was computers. So, and my, this was like around 1995. And in that small town, we didn't have any education, like higher education opportunities. So I was like trying to figure out, okay, what can I do? And then luckily one computer institute opened up and I somehow managed to get into their 1 year diploma program. So that led me, you know, I basically just fell in love with programming. So I was just, I used to get there in the morning and leave at night, you know, program all day, just trying to think of new crazy ideas. And then, yeah, I mean, my love for programming led me to, you know, this profession, which was on the upswing at that time. And I got a job fairly quickly when I moved to Canada. I got a job. By the way, I met my wife in the same computer institute. So as I was, you know, I found my profession, I found my wife there as well. So that was good. And when I came to Canada, I got the job within 2 months. But that first job, they fired me in within 3 months. So that was pretty hard because, you know, I struggled in India and now I struggled in Canada as well. So that was pretty painful. And then I said, okay, you know, I just need to figure out what are the skill sets I need to learn once again. And so I focused on those. And then I did well in other jobs and got promoted fairly quickly. And then, I mean, that again, you know, from junior programmer to senior programmer, team lead, then manager, then director. So that's how it sort of progressed over the years.
Okay. I'm always amazed when my husband programs something simple usually. And he says, here, watch this. And you know, I get to see the behind the scenes and I also get to see how it works. And it's, you know, if you look at the program, it's just a bunch of letters and numbers and words and symbols. But people don't, the younger people especially, take for granted. They've got a smartphone. They've got a computer. They've got a computer inside their smartphone. But there's someone somewhere who has programmed every app and created every single keystroke that makes it possible. In fact, what we're doing today, talking across three time zones because we're on an app, you know, called Blog Talk Radio. And it's just, I say hallelujah and thank you to the programmers. My life would be totally different otherwise.
First of all, now, your husband is a lucky guy. My wife couldn't care less about my programming.
I can tell you a little story. One time years ago, he was working on a program and there was an error in it somewhere. He didn't, you know, he looked at it and couldn't figure out what was wrong. So he came, knocked on my office door. He says, I need you in here for a minute. I said, okay, sure. I thought he was going to show me his latest, greatest thing. You know, he says, there's a mistake in here. I can't find it. You're an editor. Can you find what's wrong? So I said, well, tell me what I'm supposed to be looking for. He says, well, it doesn't really matter. I just need to know where the mistake is. And there were two brackets instead of just one around the code. And I looked at it logically and I said, well, I see one bracket here, one bracket here, one bracket here. I see two brackets here. Why does this one have two? He goes, thank you. That's where your editing comes in. I have no idea what the program was for to this day, but it's fascinating to me that just one little keystroke can make or break a program.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's machines are kind of dumb, you know. they are smart. They are smart at doing things if we tell them exactly what to do. But otherwise, they're quite dumb.
They're kind of like children.
Yeah.
You know, for a while, children are dumb until you train them that they need to do it this way or that way. Or maybe I should say animals.
But with kids, they have their own, you know, their own psychology as well. Like, obviously, they don't do exactly what they are told to do. But with machines, generally, you know, they just do what they are told to do.
And a machine will sit there until you engage it. You know, turn on the button, press this, flip that switch, or whatever. It's just going to sit there and do nothing until you give it instructions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a real quick break, and when I come back, I want to talk with you about, first of all, bootstrapping startups. So we'll be right back.
Okay.
Are you tired of the same old, same old? Are you sick of having to switch from station to station to find something worth listening to? Well, honey, I've got the answer. AstronetRadio.com is the new kid on the block, and we're filling our slate with original music, entertainment reviews, sex talk, comedy, and so much more. So set your devices to stream AstronetRadio.com and never look back. We play what we want so you can hear what you want. AstronetRadio.com, serving East Texas and the world.
I am back with Manoj Agarwal. We've been talking about how he moved from making $2 a day in a factory, working 12 hours a day, and now he's the CTO of Tetra Noodle, but he's a whole lot more than that. You mentioned at the beginning of the show where we were talking about you have a podcast called Bootstrapping Your Dreams, and I know
That has
to do with startups. Can you tell us how that works a little bit?
Bootstrapping, yeah. This is where, you know, there's a lot of confusion around bootstrapping. I thought it, you know, everybody understood bootstrapping. Basically, all it means is that you can generate, build a sustainable business with very little investment in a very scrappy way. And the way that it happens is, like, you know, you need to put up some money because, you know, you need the basic stuff. But the whole idea is that you put something together based on the market demand, and you take it to market with minimum investment, and your ideas are well received, and people start to pay for it, and then you start to reinvest that money back and build a sustainable business out of that. So traditionally, that's how businesses have been built for centuries, but lately, you know, this whole thing about private equity, venture capital, and all that has come in, where you basically get a shot of steroid. If you want to, if you want to build a company, you get a shot of steroid of millions of dollars, and then they then figure out, okay, you know, what do we do with this money, and how do we build a company around it? So there's a certain contrast there. Both methods are okay, but you know, since I have basically bootstrapped my own life, I prefer the bootstrapping method for startups.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I mean, because that's basically what you did. You pulled yourself up by your bootstraps and said,
yeah,
this is not what I want. I want something better for my life. And you made it.
Yeah.
You had told me that when you were working toward getting where you are today, things weren't always easy. And I know that you found a way through spirituality and meditation and mindfulness to help you get through some of those tough times. Can you help our audience understand how that might apply to what we're dealing with in today's climate with this crazy virus?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I had initially good amount of professional success, but that eventually led to a lot of personal relationship problems at my home with my parents and stuff like that. So that was quite disturbing to me because, I couldn't really get a handle on why that was happening. And but regardless, you know, as we generally are, I started blaming other people for not understanding me and whatnot. And I just basically, you know, became this hateful person. You know, just started hating everything, and then you know, I had my first son, and then for the first couple of years, I could not bond with him. That was really heartbreaking to me, and you know, that's when I realized that there was something wrong with me, rather than something wrong with other people, and that led me to, you know, finding the answers and trying to figure out what was going on with psychiatrists and psychologists and all that. They all said, you know, oh, you know, they gave me some insights, but they said, we can fix you, but you need to come to us for the rest of your life. And I was like, you know, that's not fixing anything. So I need a better way. So that's what led me to spiritual practices and meditation, which sort of the doors for me and showed me how, what reality is and how mind sort of interprets it in such a way that it actually starts to sabotage our own plan. Whereas if we sort of really look at how life unfolds, everything is so perfect. The universe makes no mistakes. You know, it's just a way of nature experiencing itself, right? So as humans, we are having a life experience. Nature is happening because nature doesn't care how do we feel or what is going on. It is maintaining the balance, and we are just experiencing nature manifest itself. So it's up to us to take it personally and say, oh, you know, the virus is doing something to us. But at the end of the day, you know, it's just another species that jumped from animal species into human species and caused this havoc. Now, the results are horrific, right? But at the same time, if you really look at it, it's a way for nature to restore balance as well, right? So if you look at it from that point of view, you know, this was bound to happen someday.
It's kind of like calling out the herd. I know that sounds crass, but it's a way to bring balance, and life is nothing without balance.
And then if you take it further, you know, from my experiences, life and death, they are continuum, right? So this notion that death is the ending of something, in fact, it's just the beginning of another something else, right?
So every beginning comes from some other ending.
Exactly.
I mean, even if you draw a circle, you start at one point and you bring the pen or pencil back around, and you end at that same starting point.
Exactly. So, but in terms of, you know, just taking comfort, as I said, once you realize, like, you know, I just ask people to go back in their lives and, you know, remember every challenge they had, like, you know, big or small challenge. And then remember what happened once they overcame that challenge, and they will notice there's a growth spurt that happens after overcoming that challenge, right? So whether that's financial growth or intellectual growth or whatever kind of growth happens. So if we flip it now and we say, okay, when we face a challenge, rather than, sulking about it or blaming others or blaming the government or whatever, we take responsibility and say, okay, you know, this is what's happening. Now this is the challenge. Let's see how we can face it. But by the way, we know the bigger the challenge, the bigger the growth. So that means once we overcome this challenge, there's going to be huge growth around the corner, right? So if you just think about, if you get into that state of mind, and you make sure you take precautions and everything, calm the nerves at least.
Exactly, because if you know that you're doing everything you can to protect yourself and your loved ones, then there should not be so much stress. I'm sure there's a little stress because there may be a shortage, but it also, I think, teaches us to find other ways instead of doing things the way we've always done them. For instance, you know, before the internet, if somebody had a radio show, you had to travel to that studio to be on the show with them. And if it was too far for you, then you just weren't on the show. But because people like you and I do our podcast, it's basically a radio show that we can do from anywhere and with anyone anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that's always the way it's going to be. You know, there are people now still holding their meetings through video conferencing, FaceTime, Skype, Zoom, and they're learning that it's not so bad to not be sitting around a table filled with donuts and coffee. So I think people are going to learn a new way of making their life better.
And exactly, as you said, a lot of things will change. You know, right now, see, the thing is, human brain is quite quite funny in that, you know, once it attaches certain emotions with certain events, physical events, it's very hard to break that connection. So now if, you know, I don't know what the economic effects are, and obviously, you know, this the death toll is rising. That's huge. That's going to leave a huge imprint on humanity, and and you know that will be associated with germs and social distancing and whatnot. And when that happens, how the society will change, it's quite unpredictable. But here's another interesting thing is, you know, every now and then, like maybe after 5 decades or 10 decades or so, there are radical shifts that happen in society, right? And so, you know, for example, the, you know, world wars brought about radical changes in society, right? Then computers brought radical changes. So it's kind of being that generation that sort of, you know, pushed humanity forward. So in a way, we are at that juncture. So we are that generation. And that's another way to look at it and be you know, be positive about this.
Well, I'm sure that when the very first car was driven through a town that scared all the horses, and the very first airplane took passengers from one place to another, people thought, this is impossible. This can't be done. We can't do this. And now we have rockets, and we're building more rockets to take people into outer space and take them back to the moon, take them to Mars, and maybe even farther. And definitely, I mean, we have people right now living the International Space Station. 100 years ago, nobody would have thought that there'd be people living in a home, basically, just outside of our planet. They thought that you had to be on the Earth to... well, we don't remember, but way back in the history classes, people thought that the Earth was flat. Now they say the Earth is round. Of course, there are people that still say it's still flat, you know. But there are people, that there are always going to be people that are rebels or different thinkers. But the world has to change. Otherwise, it's going to stagnate. And what good is that? I mean, what happens if you have something, if you have a machine and you don't you don't use it, it will rust or it will freeze up. I mean, even a computer. If you keep your, you know, your Atari or your, I can't think of another name besides Atari, Amiga. That's one my husband used to love to use. The Commodores, from Radio Shack. You can use them, but in fact, he has a 30-year-old car. He has a hard time finding parts for that car, but it's one of his favorite cars. And he loves it, and he babies it, and he washes it like it's crazy. And we get used to things being one way, but we have to flow with the earth when it's time. When Mother Earth or Mother Nature says, enough of this pollution. And, I mean, if you look at the big cities that aren't producing in mass, you know, we're not making more than we need. I think this is going to teach us to be more sustainable too, as a society, not just in the Western Hemisphere, but all over the world. I think it will teach people to appreciate what they have and to participate more in life rather than just waiting. I see my co-host Gene has finally joined us about halfway through the show. Hi, Gene.
Hi there. How you doing?
I'm good.
Did you come on to listen. I had some technical difficulties that while I'm beginning to start to learn how to join your show, I'm still learning. I was so excited to listen to the conversation just now, talking about the changes and the apex that we're in right now. It's amazing. And it occurred to me, I wanted to share, I remember watching as the internet just really started taking off, and my formal studies are in history. And so I was thinking in terms of kind of the overall effects sort of thing, and I thought, well, here is this technology just racing out of control compared to our social maturity. And I said, wow, I wonder what that's going to do. And so here we are 25 years later, and this is it. We're seeing it. People are learning everything about everything there is to know. The potential's there. It's so awesome. I'm excited.
Manoj, I wanted to know if, because, you know, we were talking about spirituality and meditation and mindfulness.
Yes.
Related to, you know, your past and how it helped you, but also with relating to what's going on in today's society. But can mindfulness help entrepreneurs as well?
Yeah, definitely. The thing is, mindfulness, let's say, what is the primary goal of a business? I mean, primary goal of a business is to produce a profit, which is produced by generating revenue, which is done by now selling is an act of giving a value to customer and getting some money back, right, in exchange.
If you are
grounded, if you know that, you know, this is something that you can back with your whole being, you will be much more likely to make big sales. Rather than, you know, if you're not into something, and this is what is related to mindfulness, because once you are mindful of yourself, or you have self-awareness, you can really hone in into what exactly you want to do. You know, people get into jobs or professions where they don't have a lot of passion, but they just get into it because, you know, that's the first thing that works for them in their career.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have, you know, this golden handcuff tied around their hand. So if they're not mindful, you know, that continues and that gives rise to other issues down the road. But if you're mindful.
Somebody has an airplane flying around.
I think it was Gene.
I muted him.
No problem. By the way, how come the airplane is flying? Aren't they supposed to be grounded? Anyway,
repeat that, please.
No, I was wondering how the airplane is flying. Like, right now, nobody's flying.
Well, I don't know. I don't think they've all been grounded because I saw something on Facebook. I think they're grounded for regular commercial flights.
I saw something on,
I think it was Twitter tonight, there was a plane full of doctors and nurses going, I don't know from where, but they were all flying to New York to help up there with the crisis.
Where was I? I forgot. What were they saying?
we got so distracted by an airplane. look, a shiny thing.
We were talking about mindfulness.
Being passionate about your job.
Exactly. So once you become self-aware, you know, then you can really hone in into exactly what you want to do. Once you get into that mode, you can you know, be sure about what you're selling, what value you're providing to the world, and be successful at your profession. So that's how I can link mindfulness to entrepreneurship. Without that, it's always like, you know, you're always like going around in circles, which a lot of us do. In many ways, I'm still doing that. So unless and until you understand what is going on under the covers and what are the mental sort of blocks that you have you need to remove to be able to get to where you want to go, it becomes really, really difficult.
So how does a person go about becoming self-aware?
There's a lot of introspection needed. One of the best tools is meditation, because here's what happens, right? Like our brain interprets reality in many different ways, and just like a you know, movie theater, you know, the light is projected on the canvas. The brain, the reality is projected on our brain, but that reality passes through several filters. Okay. And those filters are our past experiences, you know, our failures, our desires, our whatever past experiences we had. So when it passes through those lenses, the reality is distorted. But if we are able to clear those lenses and let actual reality pass through, then we can see exactly what is going on. And that is what meditation provides. It helps us to separate out these lenses and see, okay, you know, this is what the reality is, and what I was interpreting it as was my sort of twisted interpretation of reality.
That makes sense, because I think that's why some people stay within their rut, if you will. They stay where they know what's familiar. And if you become introspective and you start thinking, wait a minute, I am not my past. I don't need to behave as if I'm still a victim or I'm still a bully or whatever the case might be. You can always change your reality by just wanting to.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's interesting, okay, the meditation that you mentioned. I definitely am interested in planning to learn more about that. I find when I've come to this, to my realization, I'm not even really sure how I got there yet, but I know it just happened, and you described what happened to me, but it wasn't really, it may have been a form of meditation, I don't know, but yeah, to just
be able
to
understand.
Your guard nurturing,
of course it was meditation.
Well, maybe that's what it is.
Gardening
I just,
is meditating as far as I'm concerned.
It really
is.
Thought-provoking, it is, and freely thinking, that's for sure. But yeah,
let me ask you,
past the things that you've done and get go on and just do other things, you know, instead.
Oh, I want to ask you both a question, because this has been something that I've been working on. Would you say that there's a right way and a wrong way to meditate, or that any meditation is good?
I don't think there is any wrong way, as long as you are getting the effect that is intended to happen. Meaning, you know, you are able to, basically all it is, you know, you are able to observe your own thoughts, right? So if you are able to do that to any means, I think that that's a valid meditation method.
Manoj, I like you even more than I did a minute ago. Because that's my reality. I spent how many years thinking I'm meditating wrong. I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing this right. I need to breathe. I need to sit. I need to focus. I need to blah, blah, blah. And I was studying everybody's how to meditate. And then one day it dawned on me, if we can choose to be happy and we can choose to no longer be a victim, and we can choose to no longer be angry, then we can choose to be mindful. And if you breathe and focus on being in the now, that's been a very hard thing for me, because I'm a type A plus personality. It's very difficult to shut down my brain and say, I'm just going to sit here and do nothing but exist. I'm going to be here in the universe. And if anything happens, it happens. My husband calls that my nothing box. I just go into a nothing box and there I am. And it, if I could stay in my nothing box all the time, I think I would. But then all of a sudden I snap out of it and I think, oh, wait a minute, I need to feed the cat. Oh, wait a minute, I've got my podcast.
Yeah. No, it's that's the truth. But at the same time, there is a certain point at which you realize that completely letting go is another way to be happy, because at the end of the day, we have this illusion of control, and we get so tense about it when we start to lose that control. So if we just like sort of let go and say, okay, you know, this is what I like, as you said, we all have our priorities, you know, podcasts and pets and whatnot. But if you just let things unfold, it's kind of really nice to just observe it unfold the way that you sort of imagined it.
And I think that's why it's so hard for certain people to live in their stay home orders. You know, people are freaking out in some areas because certain areas just got the news today. You can't go out unless it's essential. Well, that doesn't mean you can't leave your door. You can't walk out into your yard. You can do things. But people take it very literal because they haven't yet learned how to just let it go and live in the moment. I'm kind of enjoying the quarantine myself.
I think I'm kind of, too, sort of.
I think I'm, well, it hasn't hit me yet that I, but there again, I do so much remotely, and, you know, all of our board meetings and things of this nature have always been through Zoom because we're in five different cities, and it's just too hard to get that many people together when they live so far apart. So that's not a stretch for me. But I think it's really hard for people who were accustomed to going out to a job, an office every day, and now they can't do that. Their routine has been disrupted. And nobody likes a disruption.
I have to agree there. Boy, I'll tell you what, we had a meeting today that was supposed to be a big, good meeting. Everybody got signed in, and it ended. We just right in the middle of everything. So we're going for plan B tomorrow. So, but yeah, just in the old meeting, we could have sat around and coughed on each other and visited for hours, you know, until we were done. But it's, everything's different. There's nothing, I don't think, that's going to be the same except for change. You know, they say it's change is the only thing that's the same.
Yeah. Before you came on the show, Manoj and I were talking about that. It's just time. If we can't do it without something forcing us to, we're not going to change. But nature has a way of saying, well, guess what, folks? You're going to have to make a change here. And so we are.
Yep. Well, you know, and I have to say this. I'd like to throw this out because I've listened to both of what you've said this evening, and I think that we're all kind of pointing to the same thing. And one of the things that I've noticed with my background of watching history, they say that history repeats itself, and I have to agree. It seems to go in a very specific pattern. And if I had some books, you know, I could probably come up with some landmarks and show you. But I think what we are now with the internet has done this, is that we have reached a point where this cycle, based on the struggle for food, clothing, and shelter, and deciding who owns the access to that we've done for 30,000 years or more, is ending, because all the resources are claimed. All the people know now that, wow, this is what we've been doing. And so this cycle of the resources being seized, protected, everybody else finally getting some, and then holding it and seizing and protecting it, and it just goes in a vicious pattern. And it's there. It's amazing. But now
mine.
We all have to get along, and everybody knows it. You know, and that's the best part. That's what makes me positive. Everybody knows it. We got to get along. Even if they don't want to, we have to now. So anyway.
Well, I'm gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, I would like to talk with Manoj about his community of entrepreneurs. Be right back, folks.
Awesome.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together to change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BeUnique.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
Welcome back to the show. I am your host, Mary. I'm here with my sidekick, Gene Albertson, and Manoj Agarwal. Manoj is an entrepreneur, and he's the chief technology officer of Tetra Noodle, which is a software consulting company. We have pretty much talked about everything, which is what we do here on Unscripted. We've talked about how Manoj started out making $2 a day in a factory in India when he was 15, and now he's kind of living the dream. We've talked about how to deal with stress and mindfulness and meditation and spirituality and the COVID virus, and even talked a bit about gardening. But I want to talk now about your community of entrepreneurs, Manoj. Would you tell our listeners, by the way, we have picked up another country. We're now listened to in 20 different countries. So tell these people all around the world about your community of entrepreneurs, please.
Cool. So you know, whatever I described, I went from working in a factory to wherever I am. Basically, I attribute a lot of that to relationships that I have built over the years. Now, initially, you know, I was very shy, very introverted, and I didn't know how to build relationships. So I had very few friends and very few, like, you know, at a professional level. So that helped me through my career. And, you know, last year when I decided that, okay, you know, I wanna take it to the next level and see what I can do with it, that's when I realized that we really need to invest a lot in our relationships. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out, you know, because I was too shy. And whenever I used to go to networking events, I just used to stand in a corner there. So I tried to figure out how to network with people, how to build these meaningful relationships, which are not based on any transaction, but they're based on some human connection. And the effect of that has been tremendous. Like, I cannot even believe. Like, you know, people talk about strategies for funnels and ads and whatnot. But if you invest in, you know, good relationships, the ROI is tens of thousands of percent. And I have some interesting stories about that. So looking at that, you know, since I was an introvert, and these are strange times. So in order to survive these times, not only survive, but thrive in these times, you need good relationships. So that's what I'm trying to build with a community of 48 to 50 entrepreneurs globally who will be, like, you know, will need to be very, very selective. But the idea is that we can bring them together in a community where we can all sort of help each other out. My intention is to have these people from different industries, different types of jobs, different roles, different experiences, so that, you know, if somebody has a marketing problem, then we can get few perspectives from other industries. If somebody has a sales problem, we can get different perspectives from other industries and bring some innovation around solving each other's problems, and also, you know, develop these deep relationships. That's the community I'm building. It's called Relationship Accelerator for Introverts.
Relationship Accelerator for what?
Introverts.
Introverts. Wow. That's real. I like that. Now,
that's good.
How would someone sign up for that?
Yeah, just send me a message on LinkedIn. Connect with me on LinkedIn or Facebook. LinkedIn will be much better. And then we can set up a call. We can go through, you know, we can just have like a quick chat. Basically, we just want to make sure that the right type of people get in. And mm-hmm. and then, yeah, I mean, if there is mutual interest, then we can go into the details and start our journey.
All right, folks, you heard it here. Go to LinkedIn and find Manoj Agarwal and to ask him about, and I've already forgotten, Relationship
Accelerator
for introverts.
Yeah.
That I just love that name. I still don't know if I'm an introvert or an extrovert or omnivert.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like
we
the idea
both,
of the
yeah.
accelerator part.
Yeah. Because
a lot of times, you know, you can get going, but it takes a little while.
Yeah. No. The thing is, some of these things that I learned, I basically, in 2 or 3 months, I built a very, very powerful network in 2 or 3 months. And that was the accelerated part, and that's what I want to share with others as well. And obviously, you know, when we come together into this community, that organically happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Other than that, what happens is, you know, these strong networks, each person who comes in, they have their own strong networks, right? So when we all come together, it has a very multiplicative effect.
Yeah, that makes sense because you need to have a balance there. We've been talking about balance all night. I think this is going to be the balance episode. But you have to have that kind of balance within your own business.
Yeah.
You have to know, what was it Kenny Rogers used to say, know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to run. So what gave you the idea to create a relationship accelerator for introverts?
It's just my own experience, right? I've been struggling to figure out what exactly I help people with, because it's kind of broad, and I had a tough time telling people what I do, because I work on the mind, I work on technology, I work on business, and everybody used to get very confused about that. So one of my good friends who actually encouraged me to start the podcast, he actually showed me the light that, you know, I am good at building relationships. So that's what I should be focusing on and teaching people how to do that. And then I realized, yeah, I mean, that there is some truth to that. And that is where most people, most people lack that understanding. And due to that, you know, they are not prepared for a crisis like this, right? But if you had invested, really some goodwill into building these relationships, you will be much more calmer. You know, you'll have somebody to talk to, you'll have some support. And this should be a wake-up call that, you know, we should learn this skill, and we should start developing these relationships. And that's why, you know, I want to bring it right now and make sure that, you know, we can support each other and accept this.
So everybody who's listening, go to LinkedIn and look up Manoj Agarwal, drop him a message and let him know that you want to be involved in the Relationship Accelerator for Introverts. Now, you said there's a space for only 50 people, right?
That's right, yeah. We want to keep it small because, you know, I want to make sure that these people get, like, really high-quality information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I get my information from some of the best, most brilliant minds on the planet. And that makes a whole bunch of difference in how I work. So I want to bring all that information down to these entrepreneurs who may not get access to this information. That's the idea.
It's almost like programming, but instead of programming an app or a computer, you're helping people program themselves.
To
look at life differently.
That's true.
Yeah. Very much.
A relationship programmer. I love it. Something you said a minute ago reminded me of what I've started doing, and I started doing it this week because I've noticed on social media a lot of people, and most of them are, well, two of them are widows and one is still married, but long-term relationships. Older women are basically not sure what to do right now. They're alone, they're living alone, and they think that they're isolated because of their stay-at-home order. So I just picked one day, and I gave her a phone call. I think we talked for about 2 hours. And then I just let her talk as long as she needed to. And then I called another one. I've called three so far this week. And I just, if somebody pops into my head that I need to call them, I do. But every one of them has said, this means the world to me, even though they can talk to the, I mean, one woman was saying, I don't know what to do. I miss my grandchildren so much. And I said, then you need to pick up the phone and you need to call your grandchildren. Don't wait for them to call you. And I think sometimes we all think somebody should reach out to me, but, and my mother was like that. Oh, you need to call me. I'm not going to call you. But if we wait for the next person to make the move, we may not ever have that relationship, or we may not have that moment of connection. And they've each, it means a lot for somebody to put a card in the mail that says, hey, I'm thinking of you. Hope everything's okay. You don't have to do anything more than that. Although I will say that there was one person I called and I thought it would be really nice if I got her voicemail because I really don't want to talk long. And she was the 2-hour phone call. But we have to be human before we're anything else. And when we're going, we are, every one of us, alone in our homes with our immediate family, if we have one. But we're all in it together. Every human being on the planet is going through this or has gone through it, depending on where they are in the world. Some of them have gone through it before us and now they're on the downhill slide. But I think knowing that we're not really alone, it helps. And sometimes just, it doesn't cost you, if you've got a cell phone, it doesn't cost you anything to make a phone call. And if you're calling outside of your country, it might cost a little bit. Then I say pick up a pen and paper and put a note in the mail. The mail is still running. Oh, I also want to say thank you to the people that are all working that can't stay home and work from home. Because there are a lot of those people out there.
Definitely. And the people in the medical profession, I mean, I just can't. No, there's no way to describe what they're going through. It's like so tough.
You know, it takes a special person to sit in front of a computer and create a program because that's not an easy job. It also takes a special person to plant beautiful flowers and make his yard look like it's some kind of magical fairy land or whatever, like Jean does. But that's nothing compared to the people who work in the medical field, especially right now. But even not now, there are people, everybody has a special calling. And I think right now we should all give a big salute and a word of praise to those people that are doing their job to make us all healthier and stronger. and to keep us from getting sick. I don't for a minute criticize the people that say you have to stay home, because I'm all about being safe and not spreading this virus. Because we don't know, any of us, we could be a person who gets the virus but doesn't have symptoms and we just carry it. Wasn't it,
right.
Gene, you probably know, Typhoid Mary was a carrier, right?
That's what I heard. She got the blame for carrying it.
I mean, there are a lot of people that have a virus or some illness and they don't show any symptoms, or like tuberculosis. I think people can carry that without knowing it. And
really?
So we,
I didn't
we
know
just,
that.
I'm not certain if that's the one.
Yeah, you can have it and test positive and not get it, not activate, and just carry it the rest of your life.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know that.
I heard that here in Florida, a lot of people were testing negative for the COVID, and the tests were all inaccurate because they were doing them so quickly.
Mm.
And so we don't have a clear number of how many people actually might. I don't know if they're going to call them back and say, we need to test you again, or what they're going to
do. Yeah, but I don't know. They don't even have enough tests, I think, from what I know.
No,
right.
They don't.
It's a mess. But, you know, the beauty of it is that it looks like we're finally settling down to doing what we can do, what we know works, and that self-isolate and wash our hands, you know?
Yeah,
we can do that,
yes.
And then we can regroup and take it from there. We'll make it through.
Okay. We will.
I'm confident.
And 50 lucky introverts are going to know how to accelerate their relationships. I love that.
Exactly. That's awesome. Yeah, that's a challenge. You know, we had a young woman on here the other day that had come up with the idea of the buddy bench that helped.
Yeah, she was only 8 when she
how.
Came up with that idea.
Yeah, and people have this. I was there. I did not know how to take that baby step to achieve what I knew I kind of wanted to do. And then to be able to have this class you're talking about that shows it step by step, because there's all kinds of extroverts out there that can save the world, but they're introverts and they don't know how to start. So
yeah.
I'm excited. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
I want to remind our listeners that if they can't remember Manoj Agarwal on LinkedIn, go to Tetra Noodle. How can you forget a name like that? TetraNoodle.com. His LinkedIn information is on there. Click it, go over to LinkedIn, and see if you can qualify to join his relationship accelerator for introverts. How did you come up with the name Tetra Noodle?
So I made a video about that. Basically, you know, again, I'm from a technical background, so I don't know much about marketing. And I was just trying to figure out a name. My original company name was Spider Communications, which I started in 2000. And that was because, you know, internet web, it was called web, the internet web, that those days. So I said, okay, it'll be cheeky to call it Spider Communications. And it made sense at that time, but then in around 2007, 2010, people started asking me, do you provide like phone equipment or what is with communications, right? And so I said, okay, I need to change the name. And I was just sitting in a restaurant one day with my friend. The restaurant name is called Noodle Box. And that's our favorite restaurant. We used to go there like almost 2-3 days a week. And so I said, okay, why don't we just call it this Noodle Box. then from there, you know, I didn't want to use the Noodle Box thing. So I took the box, and since box has 4 corners, which is Tetra, so I just sort of put it together, Tetra Noodle.
Well, I like that. I like the history behind a business's name, because there's always a reason. And it may be a silly reason, or it may be a very deep thinking reason, but there's always something. And it's really cool. Gentlemen, would you believe that our hour is up?
Oh,
Well, it does not seem like we've been talking for an hour. But I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Well, I got a little bit of a late start, and I apologize, and I will be much better from going forward, Mary, I promise.
50 lashes across the naked eyeball with a wet noodle.
And Manoj, I sure was glad to listen to what you had to say. I was looking over your tetranoodle a little bit, too, earlier, and it's pretty awesome stuff, you know, to be able to show people just how to achieve what they want to achieve, because I think we've come from a last century of knowing exactly what was expected of, or we were told what was expected of us.
Yeah,
and I think today we just don't know, and people are afraid to jump out and jump into stuff without some help like you're offering in this class. So thank you.
I don't think Manoj has ever been afraid to try something new, have you?
No. That's not true. You're always
really?
Afraid. Of course. You have no, I mean, everybody, you know, if somebody says they are not afraid, then they are such a liar. You are always afraid, but you know, the thing about courage is you do it anyway. You know, even if you're scared for dear life, you just do it. And the reason is because the alternative is worse, because, you know, you want to experience something. You don't want to leave this earth without experiencing something. And if you just back off from there, that means sort of gave up on that last bit of enjoyment that you could have had from life, right? So,
mm-hmm.
So you gotta do it. You gotta just go after it. And
I probably will die, and I'll be exiting this life going, wait, I have one more thing to do.
Yeah.
This has been delightful, and I want to remind our listeners in all 20 countries, please go to tetranoodle.com, and if you don't want to go there, go straight to LinkedIn and look up Manoj Agarwal. And if you can't remember all of that, just go to beunique.org. All his information is on our website under the radio show. And you know how to spell Be Unique, don't you, Gene?
BUNEKE
.org.
Right?
Thank you so much.
Did I do it right?
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Awesome. I
enjoyed
this.
Thank you
very
so much.
It was so good.
Thank you,
Manoj.
So much.
Bye.
Thanks.
Manoj, I may want to have you come back again and do another show all about one topic instead of all topics. How about that?
No problem. Anytime.
So, well, it'll have to be in 2021 because we're booked through December of this year.
No problem. Anytime.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you so much. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.